And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
A rock and roll Christmas to you and six, my friends. Okay, this is what's going on here in Declare Your Independence. We got Rock and Roll Christmas featuring Journey Tribute, DSB. This is at Chester's. Harley-Davidson has a big, really big shoe place in Mesa. And it's it's like acres they got there. They have big, giant concerts there. And Mark Victor sent me six tickets to give or use, you know, any way I see fit. So he's always doing deals with those guys and working out. And we go out there, and I know the owners and managers and whatever, and we work out, you know, deals on stuff. Well, one of the deals here is that we got six tickets. I don't know. Are you going to go, Barry?
Yes.
All right. Wait, get you going out here. There, I got your mic on.
Yes.
Nope. Next one.
There yes. You go. There we are. We're on.
Okay. Now this is. I got six. Do I only got four now?
Is that what you're saying? Correct, sir.
Okay. So you're going. If you need more, let me know. So Donna's gonna go ahead and put it up on the site, and we're gonna go ahead and get these out because I'd really like to go. You know. Mark knows I'm a Journey fan, you know, so, but we just got to do the magazine. I mean, there's just no getting around it. So, there's a lot of work to be done. All right, we'll get to Barry in a second. Let me go ahead and tell you what's going on here. Barry and I are just going to, you know, chit-chat. What happened is yesterday, fortuitous for us all, this is what's going on. For this month's magazine... I'm going to go ahead and, write my back page, publisher's back page article for the magazine. I kind of, you know, what I'm going to talk about. And there's something that's been gnawing at me, and you've been hearing me go on about it. And it's the idea that there's a shadow going on. I mean, there's a, you know, shadow everything, you know, shadow. There's a cloud put over the innovation, Yankee ingenuity of individuals due to the blah, blah, blah. I mean, is it intentional or not? Is it a side effect of, you know, what's going on? And I'm not the only one seeing it. All of a sudden, there's a book comes out by Peter Diamandis, the guy that did the Honest Ari X Prize and a bunch of different X prizes and so on. And he has a place called Singularity University. And his whole point is that he's just trying to do innovation for various different industries using prizes. To the point that it's gotten to where the U.S. government, DARPA, and NASA, and everybody gone to him, well, that's worked really well. You get all this innovation and investment in. You give a $10 million prize, you get $400 million of investment in something. You know, that's a good idea. Let's do that. And there was Peter Thiel, which is Elon Musk co-founder with PayPal. And Elon Musk goes on to, you know, I'm going to Mars, does SpaceX, supplies the International Space Station with his Dragon capsule on his Falcon 9, you know, spaceship and so on. And he's looking to put 80,000 people. Excuse me. I had to sneeze. I'm allergic to Barry. Anyway, so he wants to go ahead and have like 80,000 people going to Mars a year. too outlandish for you? I mean, is your mind that small? Are you already thinking all the reasons why you can or shouldn't? You know? Have you been programmed? And that's what I wanted to, you know, write that article about, and some other things in the financial situation and how stock market's working, and it's end of the year and different things are going to kick in. And, you know, and let me tell you, skip to the end. Get all your money out of every bucket that is created by the man, okay? Get all your money out of the stock market. Get all your money out of your retirement accounts. Get all your money out of everything of value, everything, and convert it into knowledge, investment in your children, and your friends, a place to, you know, survive and thrive, and, you know, in silver, gold, something. You know, but out of, you know, the dollar, out of, you know, out. And I give you a whole bunch of reasons why, and it's been going on since July of 07. July of 07, I really started looking and doing, because I didn't, you know, I don't care, you know. And, you know, it's how many friends can I get, how much knowledge can I accumulate, how much silver can I store? I mean, you know, it's one of those, you know, some, you know, food and water and guns and bullets and, you know, I don't know anything. You know, brooms, you know, I don't care, toilet paper, tampons, I mean, something else, okay? And I wanted to do a little bit of research, and it kind of clicked on what I wanted to write about and how I wanted to do it. Because Peter Thiel and, what's his name, Kasparov or something like that, he's a world chess champion. That's another thing you find out. You know when these guys are world-class chess champions? There's like three or four of them. You know, in this one speech at Oxford that we put up, and it'll be up today, too. I sent they finally did the actual video of it from Oxford in England. I wanted to make sure you got to see that. And it was one thing that I see a common thread is these guys, man, they just, you know, they're literally geniuses. I mean, they just have this ability to see many moves into the future. And Peter and this other guy were making the point against other couple of guys that are just, you know, I think you had two or three other guys that are going, nope, everything's great, you know, inventions are coming, you know, fast enough, you'll slow down that buggy, you know, you're going to give us a whiplash, I mean, that kind of thing. And the point that they were making was this: innovation in technological advances has screamed to a halt. Now, you would think with all the stuff going on that there's, and they're going, not really. I mean, we haven't had big, giant inventions like electricity. I mean, think about all the stuff, all the great iPhone, iPad, you know, Time Magazine's going on about, you know, ooh, you know, the big innovations of the year and everything. Oh, it's iPad. Oh, then it's the iPhone. Oh, then it's this and that. And he goes, you know, all of that is based on the same old technology of the integrated circuit. It's just how much, you know, information we can flow through the next computer chip. And it's all about the same rehashing and fine-tuning of the same breakthrough of silicon wafers. I mean, where's the real innovation? Where's the new idea? Where's the anti-gravity? You know, where's the quantum computing? You know, where is, I mean, you find, you know, like nanotechnology, but the point that I was making and the reason we did the lab thing is because that was stuff that was discovered in the mid-80s. And they still haven't brought it to market. Nanotubes, enormous potential on so many fronts. And there's a reason. It's this risk aversion thing. And that's the point that they're making. There is a cloud. There is a shadow. Only the shadow knows. And what is it? It's government. And it's not just all the restrictions and things that they do. It's the fear. It's the, I need a permission slip before I start. You know, I need the answer is no unless, you know, somebody gives me a slip to say yes. You know, that which isn't forbidden is required. You know, I mean, it's this whole, and that's what they're, big mind, same thing that I've been screaming has become a theme with all of these gazillionaire want to change the world, change the planet people. They're going, man, there is a sickness. And I'm going, amen, brother. And a side effect of that is money.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Good morning, Barry. How are you?
Unbelievable. How are you?
I'm more than wonderful. You know, it's are you going to be here for the party Saturday?
Oh, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
This is, let me tell you what happened yesterday. I'm really wanting to make sure that in this article that I do before the end of the year, there's a lot of tax changes and different things and blah, 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 and a lot of stuff you don't even know is going to happen and everything. So I'm thinking, I want to vet it through some people that we know that are, you know, the gazillionaire we know, and we pay people to, you know,
think for us.
Right. You know, and so I call a friend of mine at, in Panama right now, and I just said, you know, hey, man, if I send you this, will you go over it and kind of, you know, make sure that I'm, you know, I know what I'm talking about and, you know, look cool. And he goes, oh, yeah, me and so-and-so are, you know, meeting Friday. I tell you what, you get it to us by tonight, you know, and they'll go ahead and go over it, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow, and then, you know, I'll get some feedback on it from people that know, okay? As I'm talking to him, Charles Goyette comes over. He wanted to drop off, a little gift, and he'll be here Saturday, too. And he goes, and I'm like, ooh, did I pick the right subject or what? Okay? The Lord done saying, you know, you need to be writing about this. So I'm going, okay. So I finished up the conversation with that, and I, you know, you just know, you know, after about, I don't know, I had him for 15, 20 minutes, him helped me with this. And then the phone rings, and it's his wife, Allie. He goes, you know, I'll call you right back. And he puts it down. And I'll go, I'll bet you they had a signal, you know, make sure you call me at this time, because I know Ernie's going to, you know, it's always something.
The escape call.
Right. The escape call. So I just, I'm going. And so I try not to keep him to it. So I just took notes. And I told him what I wanted to write about, and he and I, when he wrote the Dollar Meltdown, he goes, as a matter of fact, on page 70, whatever, in Dollar Meltdown, you get the answer to that, and you want this, and do that, and yeah, and this is called that, and make sure you include this, and so on. So I have a card over there that by my desk that is just filled with things that you want to make sure you include. And I learned a new word.
Uh-oh.
Rehypothecation.
Rehypothecation.
Okay, you ready for this?
Ooh.
Okay, this is good. Hypothetically, you still maintain ownership of your collateral that you put up for whatever, okay? So when I go and I, you know, it's like a mortgage or something like that. When I go and I do trading, and this thing is coming down to the MF Global thing that happened where Salente and so on lost a bunch of his money when he put out, you know, okay, I put this money into an account. I'm trading in the futures market over here. I want to, you know, I got the I'm going to take delivery of the gold, okay? And then all of a sudden the money was gone.
Because he wanted to take possession of the gold. And there is no gold.
Well, it was... that's a whole nother issue.
There's less gold.
But what happened was is that MF Global was doing, being like a broker and trading whatever and so on. They were just a conduit by which you put your money and you go get and hold as collateral the money for the future contract that you're doing or whatever and take delivery. Because really what happens is if gold was to go down, that money was there to cover the difference, and it's kind of like, you know, your margin call and they take it and whatever. So he's doing the leverage thing. Well, MF Global was more attractive to do it simply because their interest on the money being there or something was higher. Well, it's because it was riskier what they were doing. So Corzine goes out. He's one of the boys, and he thinks that, hey, man, it's always too big to fail. They're going to bail you out no matter what. And you know, we're counting on them bailing out Europe, okay, and all these Greece bonds and all that kind of stuff. So this is what happened. The MF Global, they never told you, or you don't know what really happened to all that money and how they, it's like the magician with the coin. See, it's in this hand, it's in this hand, and in both hands, it's gone.
It went away.
It went away. Okay, now this is what happened. Rehypothecation. And I'm going, you know, they make this stuff up as they go along, all right? So What they do is when I give MF Global the money for me to use to go doing the futures market or whatever and so on, in the United States, they have a thing called rehypothecation restrictions and rules. I'll explain it in a second. But if they have a subsidiary in another country like the United Kingdom, there's no limits on the rehypothecation. Wow. But, you know, it's like the little fine print. You sign your mortgage. I know you're doing your thing with your mortgage and you're going at them and doing whatever in years and slapping them around. And it's because, you know, you get to the signing table and they go, well, here you got a whatever, or you're trading markets and they, oh, here's our new agreement, de la whatever. Well, you know, Salente, even if he did read the, 100 page, whatever the heck,
boilerplate.
Yeah, it's like the South Park episode where Steve Jobs is, Icentipad, the human Icentipad or something. You agreed. I agree. Like, I just downloaded right now while we're going into the show, an update to Adobe Flash, whatever the heck it is over there. They always say, I agree. Okay. Well, what Facebook guys find out just this last week, when they agreed to some mobile app for their Facebook and everything, Facebook took all the pictures that were on their cameras and uploaded it to Facebook.
Wow.
And now it belongs to them. Okay.
Well, of course it does.
They go, hey, man, you agreed.
Yep, says right there on page 676.
Exactly, okay? So the same thing's going on when you do these broker things. So everybody's screaming. Salente is just screaming, Corzine, USOB, I've had him on this show, and he's going off, and he's on Jones going off. He's everywhere going off on how they ripped their scumbags, okay? It's legal. This is how they did it. I give him that money, and it's kind of hypothetically, it's mine. That's kind of in, I still have ultimate control of it. It's collateral that I put up for something else, but they have whatever.
Management.
What they do is they call it rehypothecation. They got to make up these words so that they can do it. Rehypothecation means that they get to take your money that you put there as collateral for trading that you're doing, and the brokerage gets to use it as collateral for what they want to do in trading.
It's like fractional reserve banking.
Right, exactly. So they take it, and they went, and they invested in all this junk bond, Europe, Spain, Italy, Greece, whatever the heck, because they're of the mindset, well, of course, the government just bail them out. Yeah. That's how it works, don't y'all know? So what they did is they went and bought all this bond stuff, got the timing wrong. Took too long to do it. They wouldn't, whatever. All of a sudden, the calls come on it and everything, and they lost their positions. With whose money? Well, it was legal if they did it through United Kingdom. It's called rehypothecation.
Wow.
Rehypothetically do it. I couldn't. I'm like, seriously?
It's if like
you
a come, re-dream.
If you come, right. I take your dream and.
Go ahead and dream it too.
Okay, so I'm going to put, rehypothecation. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, okay? What they do, I'll go ahead and pull it up and I'll give you the definition when we get back. MF Global, the contagion at your door knocking, okay? This is the way that they did it, and it's legal. Did you agree? Did you check the box? Did you give them the money? They're doing this in a big way in the stock market with your pensions and 401k. Get money out.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay, rehypothecation is a made-up word when your word processor, word, has it comes up red, okay? They go... what?
What are you trying to pull here?
What are you talking about? Okay, and Google, I guess at one point they were going, we have no suggestion for what the heck you're talking about. So anyway, it's come up, and here it was. They're talking about what happened to Lehman. This is the first time that I can find that anybody even brought it up. Okay, here's a short excerpt from the article, and it's called Rehypothecation Risks, Rights, and Costs. Now, this is from a blog, a financial newsletter thing guy put up, hedgefundblogger.com. The dangers for hedge funds of having their assets rehypothecated became painfully clear last week. $22 billion of the, and this is September 08, I think, $22 billion of the $40 billion held by Lehman European Prime Brokerage have been rehypothecated. Hedge funds trying to reclaim the rehypothecated assets have found themselves in the queue of general creditors, likely to get back only a portion of their money. This is the MF Global thing that happened like 2 years later, three years later. You know, even those hedge funds which had insisted they did not want their assets rehypothecated, such as Amber and the small RAB Capital Fund. Heck, I'm impressed that they even knew to request it. Don't face a long and potentially painful wait to get back securities held in segregated client accounts. Okay, now you remember, hey man, I thought my money was supposed to be segregated from the broker, blah, blah, blah. Yep. Remember Sonnet Day going on saying about that? Administrators of Lehman's London business have told hedge funds it is likely to take months to calculate how much is due to whom and to offset this against debts, blah, 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 blah. Okay. This is what's going on. If I want to get better rates, it's all about yield, you know. I want to get, you know, a higher percentage. I need 6, 8, 10%, you know, of always kind of giving me, oh, we give you 2% more than these guys just hit, I agree on this checkbox, okay? Well, what you're agreeing to is to allow them to use your money. Okay, that's one thing. But it has a risk of they could lose your money as they use your money.
Yeah, they can borrow it, the ghost money. But if they lose the ghost money, you've got to take it out of the real money pile.
Right.
These are what are called derivatives. I mean, they're
yeah, I mean, it's kind of... Well, it was
they moved the same way.
It was the backing for the derivative bet.
Right.
Okay? And at some point, somebody's going to go, hey, man, somebody put up something. And they go, yep, we did. It was our client's money over here. Okay, it's ours now. And the clients go, hey, we put that up for us to use over and whatever. Yeah, but you check the I agree box. Okay? Now, this is... And think about this. Hedge funds, okay, you just might as well fill in blanks like 401k, pensions, IRAs. It's all the same thing. You know, to them, it's just a group of it. You know, how I always put it, what's my bumper sticker? I always go around my bumper sticker stuff. I go, buckets of money. Plumbing from the buckets of money. The money's going to be, everybody all in? You all in now? Okay, it's ours now. Oh, the stock market's up to 13,000 again. Everybody all in again? Okay, that's ours too.
Look, the stock market's up. Oh, but we won't talk about the dollar value being down.
Yeah, right.
That's the whole unit number go up.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. Okay, now this is another thing. When you see them, if you can't watch a golf tournament or anything without all these guys up there telling you how they're the greatest brokerage and they're going to do whatever, or you're watching, some financial news or whatever, and they, here they are, and you got the green line and follow financial, whatever you call it, and babies in cribs going on about how their trading app works on their smartphone and all that stuff. Well, there was somebody that did a YouTube spoof of that baby.
Really?
Yeah. It was up, and it goes, whoop, look, I lost all my money, and all like that. And it was funny, and they take it down. They did the YouTube snatching like you wouldn't believe on that.
Oh, that's funny. Let's mirror it.
I bet you it's up,
Ghosted somewhere.
Well, heck, you can do it. You just take that commercial and you just dub it over whatever you want, So I thought it was very clever. Well, yeah, we should do that. I put it up on Freedom's Phoenix. I go, yeah, make me take it down.
Well, you got all those Hancock babies running around. You can make your own.
This is true. Yeah.
That way you don't get into copyright.
I don't know how to do the mouth thing,
Put some peanut butter in there.
Right.
That's what we do with animals.
Like Mr. Ed. So what happened? The horse, of course. The Uber. Yeah, we're showing our age on that one.
Yeah.
So what happens, I'm going, all right, why are they pushing for everybody to get involved? Because they're the last bucket of money are just individual investors, just people. And they go, well, if they can't get them to trade, well, what do? Well, they got to do the financial planning thing. It's called money markets, or it's a switch, or, you get to manage your IRA, or you get to, but you can only do it in a certain way. And if you want to do your retirement to get any kind of gold or silver, it's got to go to an ETF that's managed. Okay? So it's buckets of money that they get to create and socially and economically engineer to put it into a certain place so they can do the magician coin hand thing. Okay? I see it coming. Mm. And I'm going, get out. And I can give enough. You know, so I go, look, see, this is, you know, you think you're smarter than a lot of these guys? Now, there are some guys that we know, you know, off air, I'll tell you some of the names, but there are some guys, you know, Charles was saying, goes, yeah, that's how, what's his name? You know, what happened to him? Really? That, you know, I'm going, wow.
Yeah, I'm finding out a lot of my friends who had, you know, just sort of on the sly thought they knew something that the rest of us didn't. They invested, and now they're like, can you loan me 40? Have you got 50 bucks?
Right. I mean, people that, I mean, really you would think would be international people that trade and, right. and provide services for other people to move their money out of the country, to get passports, to bypass whatever haven, de la tax, something. These are the guys that got nailed, just like Gerald Celente. Why? Because they didn't check the I, you know, wish you to take my money box on the agree to thing.
Yep.
And because it says, we can steal your money right here. Hey, man, you signed it.
It basically is power of attorney over your money is what you end up giving them.
Right. And they're coming after. I know a lot of people, they go, they just can't believe it. They'll go, how are they going to nationalize my retirement? How are they going to take my pension? How are they going to do the 401k and IRA and, the, you know, whatever? I'm going, how are they going to do that? Well, they've already got something you signed agreeing to let them.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm going, okay, rehypothecation.
Yeah, read that third paragraph. We get your firstborn son.
Right. And, you know, and I remember this thinking the same thing back in the 90s when you had the multi-generational loans for real estate in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
You remember
yeah.
that?
Wow, yeah. Now, when the big Japanese going to take over the world thing.
Yeah, they were, oh, they
when,
were.
When they bought Rockefeller Center, right. and people thought they were going to run off with it.
Right. And I'm going, yeah, well, at least yeah, they're not taking it anywhere. So what they did is you would have these young, they'd show them on television, they'd do specials on whatever it was, you know, 2020, 60 Minutes or something. And you have these, you know, 20-something, early 30s, young couple going in to pay, you know, I don't know, $1 million or something for a 950 square foot little nothing with, you know, rice paper dividing walls in Tokyo, high rise, de la whatever. And they're having to sign an agreement that the debt would be guaranteed by their unborn children. Well, what happened with our debt and everything? How different is that? You know, it's not my debt.
It's the same thing. It's the remember the bait. Well, of course, remember the babies with the barcode on their butts.
Right.
That's a brilliant thing. You know, it's amazing how well, it's sort of like these politicians. You know, we always say, well, you got to have out of the box thinking and stuff. Well, you know, they all promise us. And we end up like with Janet Napolitano got mad when I said, yeah, all we ended up with was a bigger box.
Oh, yeah. They're ready to build them a big box. Man, includes everything.
Well, they just we need people who can think way away out of the box, like Peter Thiel and the rest.
No
of
more box. No boxes.
No
boxes. We're going to talk about no more boxes here on Declare Your Independence. Barry Hess and myself in just a little bit. You guys stay right there. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies.
Yeah, I want to break free from your lies. Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. That's what I like doing. Man, this is a secret.
What if they're all lies? There is no truth.
It's all, that's the point that I'm making. Yep. You know, Charles was, we're talking, and so I remember at the end of his book in The Dollar Meltdown, he made a big deal out of, look, the only thing that you can do with all your money, and so because there was, they made rules, okay? They say, well, all your money and all your retirement, all your investment, blah, 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 you can't, you know, it's not really yours. We'll give it back to you later, pinky swear, okay? And, you know, I get emails from pinky swear. What the hell is that, you know? And I remember you used to lock your pinkies and you go, pinky swear, you know, I'm just, anyway, you know, like age thing. So what happened was, is I'm going, well, Charles, in his next book, you know, the Red and Blue and Broke All Over, he's kind of, I mean, you know, if you can get it over and do and kind of the bottom line, you know, get your money out, okay? You know, hold your gold. And we were talking about that yesterday. He goes, no, you know, that's one way of being able to use the ETF to be able to transfer into something that will have more back value, but it's still paper. Get physical control of your money, okay? Put it in the gold, silver, whatever, you know, hold it. And this is why. I'm going to read you the this is a wiki. You know, the definition of that, I think it's the most succinct and closest definition of what's going on. Okay. Hypothecation. This is where the word comes from. You can't make this stuff up. Okay. I'm going to be screaming in this article, get all your money. Okay. Bury it. Coffee can it. Buy the maple tree kind of stuff.
Not in currency.
No.
No. Got to be hard tangibles.
Right. You know, I was watching last night the Mankind, the History of Us, or whatever.
Yeah.
And they were going on about, you know, the thing that changed the planet was metals. You know, it started off with gold in the Middle East and everything and so
pepper.
On. And when they went to, pepper had a lot to do with it. But what were they trading for it? Silver.
Right.
And they went to, they wanted, you know, the Incas and the Aztecs and the Spanish and go in here and Cortez, like, give me your money. And
yeah,
I got
some smallpox for you.
I got a gun and, yeah, here's some smallpox. And what happened was they found enormous veins of silver. I mean, it's like 12-foot high veins that go into the mountain, kind of, man, silver be coming out their rear. So silver was the big trading thing and became, you know, the money. And right. And so it was just an enormous boon to mankind in trading because it was something that was precious, valued by everybody. It was fungible. You could... You know, it had an ounce of silver here is the same as an ounce of silver there. You could cut it in half. Now it's worth half of the silver. I mean, you know, it's just, and it was more dense that you could ship it and do it. And there would be Spanish galleons had 23 tons of it that you had Lord Drake going around with his permission slip from the Queen to go pirate.
Yeah, I'm a pirate. It says so right here.
Yeah, right. It goes pirate. Yeah, that's what it says. They, one ship paid off the entire debt of England and funded them for another year. One ship.
Just one.
You know, and there's a whole bunch of these that, you know, storm sunk. Dude, there's enormous amounts of...
He got like 70 ships or something. It was amazing. And he was a young man, Francis Drake.
It was amazing that he was able to even do that.
But did you see his tactics? I mean, he'd just kind of loll around behind the ships that he wanted for a couple of weeks out at sea. And then he kind of innocuously come up beside him. And they were dragging barrels behind him to slow their own ship down so they'd stay behind the other guys. And they all lulled him into confidence. And then they just kind of cut the barrels and they'd slip right up beside them and open fire. And they only took out the mast.
Right.
Yeah.
They didn't want to sink the ship. You don't want to sink the ship. So this is, I mean, it's interesting that, all right, well, let me go ahead and go in the hypothecation thing. I mean, this is it. Did you guys know this? I mean, I deal with this stuff all the time. I mean, I'm, you know, covering it. I watch, you know, I never hear this. The only thing you hear is that, I don't know, I put it into my fund and all of a sudden the magician went, like, you know, crossed his hands and the coin went away.
Just went away.
Okay. All right. This is and it's only, I don't know.
I can turn your money into my money.
And, right. It's 100 words, you know, so it's not that long. Okay. Hypothecation is the practice where a borrower pledges collateral to secure a debt or a borrower. Okay. As a condition precedent to a loan, has a third party, usually an affiliate, pledge collateral for the borrower. Okay, whatever, you're borrowing, you're putting collateral up. Okay, that's what they're saying. The borrower retains ownership of the collateral, kind of like you live in the home, but the home is the collateral, and then the bank takes it if you don't, you know, that kind of thing, right? Under certain conditions. And when the conditions that they are supposed to meet, they don't care about them. It's just what you say. I mean, they make it up as they go along. The borrower retains ownership of the collateral, but it is hypothetically controlled by the creditor. That's where this hypothecation word comes from. But it is hypothetically controlled by the creditor in that he has the right to seize the possession if the borrower defaults. A common example occurs when a consumer enters into a mortgage agreement in which the consumer's house becomes collateral until the mortgage loan is paid off. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. This is the deal when you do this. You go into this contract and it says under these conditions. Well, the mortgage, loaner, you know, has conditions that they have to meet too. But it doesn't matter when they don't meet. So that's where you get in the show me the note stuff. You go to court. You go in there. There's the conditions. And they go, oh, I'm sorry. You know, we might as well be the government because we own all the judges and everything anyway. Oh. And we can do what the hell we want. And it sucks to be you and it doesn't apply to us. When they go, oh, we're going to seize it because you didn't, you whatever. Oh, then they just take it. And they just make up reasons that they take it and different conditions that they take. I mean, it's, you know, just a lot of fraud and robo-sign, all kinds of stuff. It's always there's rules for them and there's rules for you. Okay, so you know, that's
they can always expedite the loan. That's the killer on it all.
They can always just come in and say, "Yeah, we want full payment. Yeah, do it.
Pay it now."
So they always leave that in there too. You know, a lot of people, that's in your "I agree to" little box.
It is.
Okay, now, you don't know this stuff until it happens. All right, now here we go. The consumer's house becomes collateral until the mortgage loan is then paid off. So if you meet your obligations and you pay off, okay, it's yours. All right. Well, in rehypothecation, that's not necessarily so. Okay, that's a little boxy check. All right, here we go. The detailed practice and rules regulating hypothecation vary depending on context and on the jurisdiction where it takes place. In the U.S., the legal right for the creditor to take ownership of the collateral if the debtor defaults is classified as a lien. Okay, so there's where all these terms come from. So they make up a new word. Well, it's called rehypothecation, and which means what? They can have rehypothecation and rehypothecation with steroids on it, and they just make up crap. Okay, rehypothecation is a practice that occurs principally in the financial markets, where a bank or other broker dealer reuses the collateral pledged by its clients as collateral for their own borrowing.
It's amazing. I want your house to be collateral for my loan.
Yeah, how would you do that with a loan? It'd be like
in a private market. Oh, you know what the sad thing is what people.
Well, they did it. It's called the derivatives,
right?
From your mortgage.
Exactly, this is so mind-boggling because if you look at who has the legal liability for the collateral in these cases,
doesn't matter. They just change the law and they change it.
But it goes back to the original borrower is liable. Like on your house, you're liable for what happens on the collateral property. If anything happens, somebody comes and breaks their leg, you're responsible for what happens on the collateral, but you cannot control the collateral. Like the guy who was told, hey, you can't build within so much of an old tree in California. You can't build a shed or a building. He wanted to shield his horses. So he just built a giant table and chairs, like a piece of art. I mean, I'm talking giant. It was a stall for the horses. That's what he was doing. You could build chair and table artwork near the tree, but you couldn't build the shelter for the horses. So he just called it another name. And it looks stupid to have this big, huge 25-foot chair sitting in the front yard.
Whatever it takes, man.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you did. So you trust your money to these people?
Oh, man.
Seriously? I mean, let's put all my money in the stock market. That's one thing Charles is saying. God, who is it? Maybe the other guy I was talking to. They were saying, look, man, you know, stock market's up. Time to take it out. Go, 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 go. Run, run, run. Do not walk. Run. Take your stuff. Get it out. Do it now. You know, the tax thing is going to hit and the fiscal cliff, blah, 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 and all this other stuff. It's all a smokescreen. Let me tell you, the plumbing has already been done. And it goes to a funnel. And that funnel leads to Goldman Sachs. Okay? You know, this, all this has got one thing. They're in charge of every... We'll talk about it when we come back. Get your money out.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
We are not afraid! Here on Declare Your Independence, but we are relatively concerned. Okay, now this is the one thing I want to encourage you to do. Go and go to the Android market and download, you know, the Play, whatever the heck it is, you know, your app store, and download Freedom's Phoenix app, okay? Now, we've had that for, it's been over a year probably.
Yeah, been a while.
So you go there and you need to, you know, kind of keep up on things, certainly now and maybe, you know, forever. But the main thing is a lot of this stuff is going to happen fast. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what else to do other than just, because of the tax thing, a lot of people are cashing. And that's one thing Craig Cantoni was going on about. He and I were going back and forth. And so when I read it a few days ago, an email exchange, the discussion group is this next Wednesday. You want to go?
Yeah, I'll go.
Yeah, Gary and I are going to go.
Oh, that'd be fun.
So be over here like 5:30 next Wednesday, and I'll let them know. I'll bring two guests, you and Gary. I think that'd be interesting. Yeah, you want to go. It's Wednesday. All right. Now, this is the group that is the these guys. You know, they're the boys. And they are trying to convince us, whatever. They'll make whatever excuses for Boehner, you know, of how... I just want to strangle these people. This, it'll happen right before me. Well, yeah, but we had to do it for fill-in-the-blank reason. And Shattuck brought back the TARP, Nationally Socialized the Economy, and the Goldwater Institute gives him a senior fellowship. Okay? You know, I'm going, somebody explain this to me. And one of the guys looking at me goes, money. And I go, okay.
Contributions.
Yeah, whatever it was. You know, yeah. There's a 501, somebody give him a, you know, shiny badge. Okay? So I'm going, wow. All right? And it's already starting. Here we go. At the top of Freedom's Phoenix right now, it says, Secret Service demands eBay remove all NorFed Liberty dollars as counterfeit currency.
Okay. They're after the NorFed that, what's his name?
Von Haas. Yeah. Bernard Von, what's his name? Okay. Now, I've had Bernard on. Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about, see, I anticipated this was going to happen. And the reason was because they put on the word on the, you know, dollar and all this other stuff. And and really, a dollar is defined as, they might have had a better chance if they did it at 0.77 ounces of silver, some set of 1 ounce, because a dollar is defined as a weight of silver. That's right. What a dollar means, okay? And, you know, a lot of, like, we were at the Breakfast Club this last Saturday, and one guy was there talking about some financial stuff, and the other guy goes, do you know what the definition of a dollar is? And I know they're just trying to show off, and, you know, and he didn't know, and whatever, you know? And it was Campaign for Liberty guy that was talking, and these older guys, they want to get him. Yeah, I see, you don't really know. You know, like, yeah. Well, you don't. I mean, you should know this stuff. Well, what happened was the Secret Service, they go like this. They said, you know, here is the takedown notice from Der Fuhrer, you know, says whatever. And it goes, the United States Secret Service has requested the removal of all NorFed Liberty dollars on the eBay site as counterfeits. Here's the email received from email today. And somebody put, you know, Chip Saunders put this up. Unfortunately, we had to remove your listing because of the following. The United States Secret Service has requested the removal of all NorFed Liberty dollars on the eBay site as counterfeits. If you have any questions, you can contact them at U.S. Secret Service Public Affairs Office, and they gave phone number. Should I give it out? 202-406-5708. 202-406-5708. You can't even put up on eBay. You know, I wonder, what about Craigslist? Well, they'll just move over to whatever, you know. Yeah. But the thing is, I'm going, wow, that's amazing. We appreciate that you choose to list this coin on our site and understand there was no ill intent on your part. Your listing fees have been credited to your account. Replica coins are no longer allowed on the site. Okay. There are other coins and stuff, too. You know,
There's a lot of them.
Yeah, I would think it's like Franklin Mint, the gold-clad, blah, 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 replica, you know, similar, what you call it, thing of the whatever. And so now, you know, please note, violation of this or other eBay policies may result in forfeit of eBay fees on canceled listings, limits on account privileges, and account suspension. You can review that, you know, we pass new laws, okay, or new rules. It's already started. I mean, you know, this is just just one more example of this kind of crap. So I feel it coming. You know, this is, and they're going to just pass rules saying you can't. Now, I remember there was another article that we had up, and it was, I think it was the Ukraine. They passed a law saying that you couldn't list any other currency other than their local, you know, the king's, whatever it is, as an exchange medium for anything. So, like, if I put up, you know, like Badnarik, you know, has his book for sale for an ounce of silver.
Right.
That would be illegal. Hmm. You can't do that. You got to put it in dollars or whatever their ruble or whatever the hell it is that they're using. So, this has already started, okay? Let me tell you why the king's funny money has value, because you can't use any other.
That's why.
Because I decided. Because I'm the man.
And I know you saw the solutions in my book.
I did not start your book yet. I got it right here. You know, Barry wrote a book, and I had, you know, it's magazine week, man. I mean, you know, let me tell you what Don and I do on magazine week. No grandchildren. You know, that we don't want to talk to anybody. We can't have, can't you just, no. No, no, no. Let me tell you what Donna does. She goes into the back room, her, you know, the magazine room, and she, yeah, I'll go back there and I'll check on her. Are you working? Slave, are you in your chair? Get to work. Keep typing. Oh, and then I look and I see her feet hanging off the end of the bed. She's laying down. Get up. You're not working. Here's some, go be making some coffee. Here's a 5 hour. She's like, shut up and go away. So what she does is she's back there for a week. You know, and that's all we do is we work on this stuff. I'm working on doing the layout for the calendar. We're using the, you know, all the artwork for the calendar. Oh, I got to show you the artwork. There's a couple of little bitty baby changes that Athena's working on right now, and it'll be done probably today. The cover for this month's magazine depicts a scene of Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast and how the voluntarist, you know, would come to the rescue of. And what sparked this was our experience. So Charles and I were covering over to Air America, Katrina. And oh, man, it was documented detail by detail by the left.
You cannot help. Only government people can help.
Right. And he didn't do it right. Okay. So this is where Common Dreams and Daily Cause and, you know, Raw Story and all these, man, they got a bunch of their launch from Hurricane Katrina. Because Hurricane Katrina gave them an opportunity to say, you know, Bush is bad. Okay, he's bad. And this is one of the other experiences we have with Kirsten Sinema that, you know, is now Congresswoman Kirsten Sinema that Pal Gamble's running against that, you know, the Republicans blame him. Okay, this is what happened. She's a state senator. She ran as a green socialist, whatever, before. Yep. And then, you know, the Democrats said, we embrace socialism. So all of them go over there. And then she runs and she becomes a legislator. And then now she's a congresswoman. And she had the line. Her and Janet Napolitano were buds. I mean, you know, they're both, I don't know, bi, lesbian, whatever. That was another issue everybody kept making a big thing out of. And I remember when you were running against Napolitano in, When was the, was it 02 and 0, did you run against her in 6
Salmon. Too? Oh, yeah.
Okay, she was running in 6 too, yeah. And I remember everybody going, they going, yeah, that, the dyke this and the dyke that. Yeah. At first, I didn't even know who they were talking to about or what they were, you know, the Republicans, they'd always refer to it. And libertarians are going, what are you talking, oh, you're referring to Jen. One, you're assuming we give a crap about that. That's your best reason you got for not voting for her? I go, man, you got to come up with, you know, better game than that, you know? But Kyrsten Sinema, I got to tell you the story when we come back of how she used Katrina.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Here's the light in your eyes that keeps shining. You know what it makes me think of is Chris Bliss Bill of Rights Day next Saturday.
Yeah, that's exciting.
You know, this is, wow, this is a good story. Now, okay, I'll go ahead and tell you this story. All right. Chris Bliss, a stand-up comic and juggler and so on, and he's, you know, big woo-hoo and give me $10,000 and I'll go perform for your corporate whatever, okay? The guy is very talented and he has a lot of skills and he's become a friend over the years. And he and some of the other guys, you know, when Charles and I were over at Air America, they were like, well, you know, okay, I guess you're, you know, libertarian, liberal enough, and we can be buddies and so on. So we get the progressives. And I tell you what, Bob Christie was the general manager there, and I mean big time liberal, big time. And I tell you what really pissed him off, kind of started him on this road to this more libertarian thing. He read James Bovard, Lost Rights.
Oh, excellent.
And when he read that, all he's like, you know, oh, man, he was teeth grinding the whole time. He'd come in after every show, and he'd just sit there, and we'd go out, and, you know, and that's one thing about a smoking cigarette. You know, Charles is always on my ass. I mean, I don't buy cigarettes. I don't, you know, smoke them. It's just, you know, I have one when somebody's out, or they go out and smoke a cigarette, because that's where you learn everything, because this is one thing that I learned. A
lot of talk.
You get at least 3 to 5 minutes of someone's undivided attention as you're standing out the back and getting all the dirt of the inner office, whatever. And it's the board ops and the sales managers and the sales and then, you know, the whatever, you know. And Charles, who told you that? I go, that's what the cigarette was for, man. Yeah. You know, I sacrificed my lungs to go find out some nitty gritty on the whatever. So this was, of course, he wasn't willing to do that. But, you know, he definitely wanted to hear all the goody, though. So this is, I got from, I mean, high end guys and all kinds of stuff. It's amazing what you'll find out. When you just stand there for the 3 minutes and you just be quiet and you say something, just let them talk. I mean, you go, Ernie, you let somebody talk? Oh, yeah. Sometimes I did. Once I get them going, you just keep on yammering. All right? Now, Bovard just sent me, he's got a new book coming out. Now, he sent me a little something. Donna, didn't I send you something, Bovard's thing to put up? It was a couple of days. I'll go check my email. Pardon me? Yeah, you did. Okay, so it's coming. Did you schedule him?
Yes.
Okay, so Donna's scheduling James Bovard, and he's going to have something to say. All right, the Bill of Rights thing. I mean, the segment, because this involves Kyrsten Sinema. Okay,
yeah. And Russell Pierce.
Okay, what happened is this Saturday. I mean, not this Saturday. A week from this Saturday in the evening is going to be the Patriot activist roast thing that 4409 is putting on, and we're going to go have some fun with that. Earlier in the day, we're going down the Wesley Bowen Plaza, which is the park that's around the state capitol here in Arizona, for the dedication of the Bill of Rights Monument, the first in the entire United States, 240 whatever years, and we do not have a monument in the entire country to the Bill of Rights. Now, Chris, as part of his routine, he would get up, he's at the improv and so on. We did a big improv, a couple of them, fundraisers, right. Yep. You know. Didn't you go to one?
I did.
You know, just to hear this last summer.
I was there with
Kyrsten. Yeah.
I came up and put my arms around her, and she was like, asking, oh, come on, Kyrsten, you love me.
Okay, let me tell you. When we were doing the, I remember, when Chris had Black Chris with the AR-15, Obama's there and everything, she was there on the corner with us.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Kirsten came up. Hey, Ernie, what you got your guns, I see. Yes, we did. Okay. So she understands the whole reasoning behind it. She'll, of course, vote to whatever. But, you know, she understands. She knows who we are and why we do it. That doesn't matter. It's all a game. It's all theater. Mm-hmm. You know, they already made their bed. They're lying in it. Okay. Now, this is what happened. Chris comes up and he goes, Ernie, I can get private funding. He started mybillofrights.org. He goes, we will raise money. And at first, there was no corporate donation or not. It couldn't be a donation more than $100. Then it got everybody and their grandma wanted to give money. And finally, goes, oh, okay, we need more money. And he started taking larger sums from corporations and, I don't know, Coca-Cola or whatever. I don't know who he get from. But what happened was he started going around the country, and he even lived in Austin, Texas for a while working on this, you know, at the Capitol in Texas. They agreed to do this too.
Right. I thought that had gone through.
Well, they did, but they haven't actually put it up yet. Oh. So Arizona will be first. So what happened was, is he's going around and, you know, a monument to the Bill of Rights, because in his comedy routines, he was saying, oh, well, you know, the Ten Commandment thing, who cares? You know, it doesn't matter as long as the Bill of Rights is there by it, saying, you know, you can't abridge freedom of worship and all that kind of stuff. And somebody pointed out to him, they go, there is no monument to the Bill of Rights in the entire country. So no Washington, D.C., nowhere, no nothing. And he goes, are you freaking kidding me? So instead of, you know, jumping on the bandwagon, got to ban the Ten Commandments, he goes, hey, can we have a Bill of Rights monument? I'm just wondering, all right? So he starts this, and it takes off, and Charles is pushing it on his show, and I'm doing what I can. I'm, you know, and behind the scenes, I go, to do this, you need to have a place to put it. Now, he wanted to put it on at the Taj Mahal over there, the state Supreme Court building, you know, made of marble and mahogany and something. These guys, they don't spare any expense, you know. So he goes there or at Wesley Bowen, which is kind of right down the street from him, around the Capitol. So he's going, all I need is some dirt, plenty of land out here. Give me some dirt somewhere, and we'll put it here. So they go, all right, well, this is what happened. Karen Johnson, you know, was co-chair of Ron
Senator
Paul's
Karen
campaign.
Johnson.
Yeah, she was a state senator, and she, you know, Ron Paul and kind of state senator, one of the first that came out endorsing him right away. She's very conservative, Mormon, Mesa, you know, right-wing kind of constitutionalist Karen Johnson, good friend of ours. She says, absolutely. You know, you want some dirt? Here's some dirt. Go put a monument to the Bill of Rights. Well, they thought, now, of course, since it's all these liberals and everything that are ones wanting to do it, they wanted to have a liberal and no more liberal than Kyrsten Sinema. Okay?
No more.
So, Kyrsten, will you support having some, you know, property just to put up a privately funded, libertarian mindset kind of thing here, privately funded monument to the Bill of Rights on state land here by the Capitol? Sure. So the most liberal left and the most conservative right came together and co-sponsored this bill. Now, first, I went to Russell Pierce, because we know Russell, and I did it because I knew he was gonna screw it up. I knew he was just going to do me a big, giant favor and be Russell. He just can't help himself. So I go, Russell, what are you doing? He goes, well, we can't have anything to do with the Democrats. That being, you know, I go, I don't know. He's always looking at the political angle of this. And I go, okay, had your chance. You know, and that conversation happened for like a day and a half. So I'm just, okay, I just want to make, because he's House Appropriations Chairman. Right. He has a lot of influence on different stuff. Finally, it goes through. Nobody wants to vote against this thing, but they didn't want to have a Democrat as a co-sponsor. So they killed the bill, did what they call a strike all amendment, and it's some, I don't know, other bill that's gone through all the committees and so on. It's at the end in the final vote, and they strike everything out of it, and it's some sidewalk improvement thing or whatever. I mean, some crap, you don't know what it is. And they strike everything, reinsert the bill that did exactly what it was, stripped off all the Democrats, Republicans passed it, it's a Republican thing.
Yep.
So we all said,
I dealt with Russell on that a lot.
You know, and Kirsten's cool about, yeah, whatever, I don't care. Even though everybody knew, and she'd go different things and make jokes about, yeah, as long as it's got the First Amendment one up there, I guess I can put up with the Second Amendment. All that kind of crap, all right? So now it's being constructed. They're putting it, the monument, the monolith up there right now, 10 of them, each Bill of Rights. Yeah. Each one of the rights, and they're putting it together right now.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Well, Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Mary Hess, sitting in yakking it. We'll talk about his new book here in a little bit. You know, he's just getting it out, and it's all being proof edited and all that kind of stuff and everything. And it's the Peacemonger. All right, so we're going to talk about that a little bit. But you know, the it's not available yet, so we don't make it too big a deal out of it. You know, we got to make sure it's all pretty and done. That's one thing Taryn Lupo said. He goes, man, you better get it edited. You better make sure you got it all perfect, because if you put it out there on Amazon, they're going to be rip the crap out of you. Every little freaking, doesn't even matter what it is. I found a mistake. You know, so you got
to
be careful.
Hey, it scared me enough to say, all right, I got to go all the way through. And after reading Glenn Beck's book, I forgot the title, but I found two typos in it.
Yeah, go get them. You know, this is, let's go ahead and finish this story about the Bill of Rights thing. Donna's putting it up. Let me know when you got the picture up so I can show people. A friend of mine he was the IT guy, Billy Foster, over at Air America. Okay, so he helped work with us on all of this. And he went down there and he took this picture of them actually, this was like yesterday or day before yesterday, of them actually putting the monolith. Each rite is engraved in stone that's about 8 feet high. Okay, so it's a 10 monoliths that are put around, I think it's around the Vietnam Memorial
Of Stonehenge.
Right. It's kind of like that, but it's kind of a semicircle. It's not, in the middle. Okay, so it's up. All right, let me go ahead and show those on the webcam. Go to the freedomsphoenix.com, click on today's show, and you can see the picture. All right. Do you have it on today's show? Yeah, there it is. All right. There's the picture of them putting these monoliths up. That's just one of them. So they're actually doing the construction. So Chris tells me, I knew they were, making progress and doing it and got the land and breaking dirt. He goes, Ernie, they're doing it. We did it. Yay. This is the role that we played in this. When the legislation needed to be introduced to do it, he had no idea the politics. I go, yeah. Chris, you have no. He goes, it's the Bill of Rights. It's just that we're going to pay for it. They don't even have to appropriate any money. It's just like, here's some dirt. Put it up there.
Yeah, he used to be pretty politically naive.
Oh, he goes, yeah, but it's a Bill of Rights. I'm going, man, where have you been? You obviously aren't listening to the show, because I'm telling you, everything's political. So finally, we do all of it, made a big deal out of it. It was really starting to cause them some, hassle and so on. Finally, they did it. All right. That was in 2005-06.
Wow, has it been that long?
Yes. And they have who controls the Wesley Bowen Plaza is the Senate president. They have some kind of oversight of the whatever. And this is whenever we would do protests, we would go there. It'd be something. We'd set up a mic and everything. And this is how it works. To get a permit, with the Capitol Police, you must, ask for permission to protest on state land at the Capitol by asking the president of the Senate and get approval of the blah, blah, blah. Well, we're like, right. So what we would do is just to doink them. We'd do the Billy Jack thing. We'll take the right side of my right foot, put it against the right side of your head, and there's nothing you can do about it. Okay. We would send them fax, or we'd hand deliver it, or notification, or whatever. As a courtesy, we are informing you that at this time and whatever, we're going to be there doing this. We didn't ask for permit. As a courtesy, we're informing you so people don't got to die. And you don't come, and if you come out and try to arrest and all that kind of stuff, it'll be videotaped. So we would never ask permission. As a courtesy, we would inform them. And they can do whatever the hell they want or not, but you just stay out of the way. So we would go there and do all kinds of different things, never ask permission. They didn't like that. Well, you can't, you got it. And then they go and find who had the microphone, the amplification, the megaphone, and who's in charge of this. Well, then that's the person that gets arrested. That's the person, I don't know.
I'm just a rental company.
Unfortunately, I don't need a microphone, okay? So it's all good. So anyway, they finally, and then you get a new crop of legislators are coming, or new reporters, or new cops, or new what, and they just like, the older guys have been around, and they go, just leave them alone. It's not worth it, man. Don't play the game. So this is just how it goes back and forth with these guys. Now, a lot of them, they know you because you run for governor and you kind of make fun of it and you keep it light and you guys want to play. So it's they just know, just don't get stuck on them because they don't want to play.
We can turn them into a joke in a heartbeat.
Boom. Boom shakalaka. That's where Freedom's Phoenix comes in, too. Absolutely. That helps a lot. And, you know, radio station, and when Charles was on the air here locally, inside, they couldn't get away with anything. So finally, they're putting it up, and this next, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, December 15th, is the anniversary of the Bill of Rights. So they're having it done just in time so that we can have a dedication, make a big woo-hoo out of it, and I bet you this goes national. Okay?
It should.
It should. I don't mean it will, but, you know, it will. It enough. I mean, you know, it won't be a secret, okay? And Chris has been very appreciative because we helped him negotiate through the process. We put pressure at the right place at the mm-hmm. right time with the right people in the right way and different camp. You know, we knew how to play the game. So Chris has always been very appreciative, you know, of, you know, what we were able to accomplish and how. And he had no idea it was this bad. I go, of course it's this bad, man. Where you been? It's stupid, these people. By the time we get the first monument to the Bill of Rights, it's gotten to the point to where even the most freedom-oriented kind of people kind of like, doesn't matter. It just lends credibility to these guys. See, we got a monument. We're the good guys. You know, I'm like, you know.
Not that we follow the Bill of Rights. Not that we respect the Bill of Rights, but we got a monument.
You know, it was interesting that what came out of the Second Amendment part, the big opposition, there was always something in there that they didn't like, they didn't want. And I tell you, the one that was that just stuck in their craw more than anything else was the Second Amendment.
Yep.
Now, in Arizona, that's kind of, you know, that's a big wedge issue, which we started in the mid-90s. We made a big stinking deal out of this. It's just, you want to have a Vulcan mind meld, as L. Neil Smith would say, with the state. You just see how they treat your ability to defend yourself.
You know, it's funny because L. Neil and I used to come to at loggerheads. I thought he was a little crude in the political ideas, but he did say something that really got my attention. He said, you can tell a politician's character by their support or lack of for the Second Amendment. And I thought that was really crude.
Vulcan mind meld.
He was absolutely right. Neil and I have healed any wounds, any differences. I think I've come his way more than he's come mine.
Yeah, I think he has an article in the magazine, doesn't he, Donna?
I'm sorry.
L. Neil? Yeah, he's got one in there. You know, he's always good for, you know,
little shock value.
Yeah, expressing his opinion. And that was one thing. I mean, he would go to the point like, you know, I mean, not like this, but he'd kind of shock value. You're not a woman unless you've had an abortion. I mean, you know, he'd, you know, say stupid stuff like that just to get, you know, people. What? And, you know, kind of, and, you know, I don't think that he's actually said that, but I mean, it was that kind of stuff, you know. You know, it was, he was really, you know, adamant about getting the issues inserted into debate. And then he would take a real extreme position, and then he would make the argument for it. And it's like, hook on, gotcha, nah.
Sucker.
So we embodied that a lot in our activism here. A lot of our success in Arizona was by following a lot of the techniques advocated in the novels and the activism of L. Neil Smith. And that's what got him in trouble, because he was a big supporter of Murray Rothbard during the early days of the Libertarian Party. And it was Murray and L. Neil against all the, you know, the Bar Root people, okay, which is still there. I mean, you know, that's a whole other thing. But this is what happened. They get it done. They're putting it up now. And next Saturday, we'll have big woohoo out of it, and it'll be national. And that's where we're going to take, you know, the Freedom's Phoenix RV, and we'll go down there to the park and so on. We'll just put on a big show, and we'll do live broadcasting of whatever, and we'll, you know, be butt heads. We'll do the webcam thing, and we'll, you know, whatever. We'll broadcast
that.
So we'll have some fun with it. Now, and then we'll go to the roast and all that. Now, Kirsten, during Katrina, right, about the same time that this was going on, was Katrina. Okay. She was a legislator at the time and trying to be supportive of government in general, helping people. And keep in mind, at the time, they were shipping people that were displaced from their homes in Katrina all over the country.
Right.
And Arizona Memorial Coliseum, the state fairgrounds here, was full of people from New Orleans. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
Okay. I'll tell you what happened then.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Rocking in the road and whatnot here on Declare Your Independence from Ernest Hancock. Okay. Let's go ahead and get to the story I keep bragging out. All right. Kirsten Sinema, now the new congressional district 9 that Pal Gamble went and got 6 point, almost 7%.
Yep.
They like, damn, will you cost a Republican? Yeah, you're confusing us. Somebody thinks there's a difference. Okay. And that was with J.D. Hayworth when he's always on our ass. Let's run against him. And you're going to cost me that seat one day, and then you'll have a Democrat. And we were in the stairwell at church, okay? He had his little kids. I got my kids. And he goes like this. This is late 98, I think. And he goes, you're going to give it to them. I go, JD, you're confusing us libertarians thinking there's a difference.
Exactly.
He went into purple gorilla mode. I mean, if he didn't have his kids with him, he would have freaking just laid me out, man. I mean, he gets, so I'm just going, what am I supposed to say? I mean, brother. I was going around calling your brother, my brother. So I, this is, and then what does he do? He comes out and he becomes a afternoon talk show host at the Clear Channel at the KFYI over here. And what they did is any of these guys that come back, always, set him up to run again later. Well, I think he did and he lost.
Yes, he did.
And it's just, being on, the radio, showing everybody what a, neocon yard is probably not a good thing, I mean, if you're gonna, it's just
he
so,
really is just a sportscaster.
These guys are so messed up. Yeah, that's what he originally was, a sportscaster, right, at a television station, which is what they all are anyway. I mean, it's just they're just salesmen, whatever. What happened, entertainers, performers, front guy, tell me which way to jump and how high, whatever. Well, what happened was is that now we have Grover Norquist. Donna is putting this up right now. I get an announcement, Liberty on the Rocks. Okay, it's a Republican kind of. It was started to be kind of a Ron Paul-y thing. It started off being kind
That's
of a
where
freedom.
It started.
Yeah, this is a Liberty on the Rocks. It was, and it just kind of got taken over by the Republicans because so many Ron Paul supporting Republicans went to this thing here in Arizona. Well, then the Tea Party grabs it over and everything. So what happens? Freedom Works. Dick Armey leaves. Of course, he took his $6-8 million, some gazillion dollar golden parachute, I leave volunteer organization money. I mean, I don't know where the hell that came from. But, so he leaves because over dispute of direction of, my book, somebody wrote something. I mean, I don't care enough to look. But, got my money. Boom. All the rats are leaving. Karl Rove. All of a sudden, he's being pushed to the side on Fox News. They're not putting him up anymore because of his meltdown on election night. He's going, Romney really kind of sort of almost probably should something. I mean, they're just lying to themselves. And all of a sudden, they lie in hotel.
Delusion. Self-delusion was all over the place in this last election.
Well, election night, we had the party here. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Frank Tamburi was at the Republican Party. He went over there to party and get all there and kind of show his face and everything. And then after the concession speech, and then he came over to tell us all what happened. And then he came on the show and told us what happened. They are just they were echo chambering. They were believing their own BS.
Isn't that amazing?
Behind the scenes, though, they knew that Romney was probably going to lose.
Well, I think they knew it from the start. The cheating lion that really blew up at the convention, that was the death knell. It was done.
But it doesn't matter. The guys at the top of the pyramid give a crap who won.
No.
They well, do
Goldman
whatever.
Goldman owned both of them.
And, and Boehner's, mm-hmm. Boehner, whatever his name is, he's just, and anybody that didn't vote lockstep with leadership on whatever for financial stuff, you lost all your.
Just got booted from all the committee assignments.
Well, the mainly the, banking and financial and all that kind of stuff, because David Schweikert was a kind of a Ron Paul supposed kind of guy that got elected on being a Ron Paul supporting kind of guy Congress here from, I think he's Fountain Hills or something. So what happened was, is we are big critics of Schweikert. Now, Sean Dow, which is one of the Campaign for Liberty guys and a big Politico whatever, and he's proud of it, too. Hey, I went to Washington, I saw this, and the lobbyists, blah, 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 playing the game, and you got to play the game. I'm a game player, okay? So I'm just like, whatever. You go and see how that works out. Well, Schweikert was kind of, I'm going to vote no on this, maybe a little yes on that, doing this Rand Paul kind of mamby-pamby, I'm voting for the defense spending budget. It's 98 to zero. And Rand Paul, $600-whatever billion defense budget kind of something, I'm along with the boys.
Gave him 15 million more than they asked for. Billion, was it billion? Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, 15 million doesn't matter. I sneezed 15 million in the Senate. Anyway, yeah. So what happened was Rand Paul is just an example of what's going on. Now, who went from C4L over to the senior senator from Kentucky? What's his name? McDonald.
Jesse?
Okay. Jesse Benton. Now, here we had Ashley Judd, the actress, is talking about running for U.S. Senate in Kentucky. I put up, as soon as I saw that, I put the headline, in the summary, the comment, I kind of put a publisher comment every now and then. I'll do that. And I said, Jesse Benton versus Ashley Judd with a smiley face, because I knew that's what it's going to come down to. Sure enough, within 2 days, Jesse Benton comes out and says, yep, we're going to drag her through the mud and we're going to get anybody that opposes. Yeah. We're going to we know how to play pop. We're going to go kick ass. Well, a lot of people don't know where Jesse came from. You say, oh, yeah, he's Ron Paul's grandson-in-law. But where was he before that? He came over with, part of this Norquist kind of thing.
The Tea Party takeover people.
But before even all that. Yeah. I mean, he was, that's how he got in and then married granddaughter. So we'll see how that holds up. But what happened was, is that, and that's why they kind of, cast out Adam Kokesh, is because he was hammering on Benton. He knew him to be a bad guy, and he wasn't shy about it. So they did everything they could. You get, Adam out of here. Well, that was a Benton thing. Well, Benton, shows his true colors, abandons C4L, all this kind of other stuff, which is, Vodkin deals. But what he did is took the database with him, went over whatever his name is, the senior U.S. senator in Kentucky. Well, now he's, carrying water for. So here we go. Now, Rove has been pushed off to the side. Dick Armey is taking his money and run. But now we have Norquist, which is Mr. Database guy, and so the no tax pledge guy. He's Liberty on the Rocks here in Arizona, and he's Camelback here. I don't know when it says next day. I just got a thing. It's, you know when it is, Donna?
It says 6 to 8.
It's free at the Mint, which is in Scottsdale. But when?
From 6 to 8 p.m.
6 to 8 p.m. What day?
Today.
Today. Thank you. So today is when they're doing this tonight. So if you guys want to go, it's up on Freedom's Phoenix. You can see is Norquist is going to be up. If you want to go say hello and maybe put a 4409 camera. Oh, did I say that loud? 4409. Make sure you email that link to Shelton, will you? Because he lives right by there. He's not going to miss this one. That'd be bad. Okay, so this is what, and who's going to go? Now, they saw Liberty on the Rocks as a big kind of crowd thing, and it was when it was Dr. Paul kind of stuff. So all this plays into, Katrina and Kirsten Sinema. You thought I forgot about that. I'm going to tell you. Probably got to wait till the next hour. Yeah, I just dragged this stuff out forever. But, we'll start this off in the next hour, because I want to go ahead and share this story, because this is so indicative of what we can expect and what's coming. How she treat as a state legislator, the people that were shipped here by the hundreds, if not the thousands, that took over Veterans Memorial Coliseum. It's where the Suns used to play with it. It's a state fairgrounds. It's downtown. They brought in all the trucks and the cots and it's kind of like, the FEMA Superdome kind of crap, I mean, we had that here. Of course, it's nicer, in the cooler months here in Arizona, so it was a nice place. But, and they just gave them ATM cards. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, here's your cash card. Go get whatever. So then the drug dealing started. I don't know what happened to these people. They just eventually just kind of got moved, and it's all kind of quiet, and here's your trailer. Okay?
Yep.
And there's, and the role that Kirsten played in this and how she managed and her attitude on this belies everything about the liberal philosophy and what she's taken to Washington. And I'm telling you, I already see where this goes. And I know Kirsten well enough. We get along just fine personally. In fact, she was, when I first started doing radio, she was one of my first week guests in February of 2003 when she was still green. And she was head of the big anti-war protest that was down at Patriot Park in downtown Phoenix before we even went into Iraq. And under the condition that we got to bring our guns where the libertarians go. I got tape. I could probably look that up. Her going, okay, yeah, you can bring your guns. I have that.
You should find it.
I should find it. You know, I bet you I can find it before the next the show. And you get a little taste of, you know, yeah, we've been playing games. And when we had the AR-15 and everything at the Obama thing, I'm on CNN. You know, Kirsten's standing right there. She understands what we're doing.
She does.
But she represents the other side.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Oh, we got a guest for the third hour. I totally spaced it. I forgot. We got Carlos Miller. Photography is not a crime. We're going to get, you know, Carlos, we'll get to you in just a second. I promised I'm going to tell this story. I'm going to tell it real quick. One, I talked to Shelton, 4409, and I go, Norquist is going to be by your house. You need to go get, you go, oh, really? Wow, what can I do? I don't care. You know, 5 seconds of video, you can turn it into something, get a lot of people watching, you know, go have some fun. So he's going to go do that. Norquist is going to be in the valley having some 4409 action. We'll see what happens there. All right. Kirsten Sinema. Give me a second, Carlos, here. I'll get right to you. What happened when Katrina happened? There was a big giant. We were filling up entire U-Hauls at the Air America affiliate here, and Charles and I were over there. Mm-hmm. And we were filling up U-Hauls with all kinds of material and mattresses and blankets and food and water.
Supplies and materials.
All kinds of stuff. And we're just sending, shipping it. And people were getting, they're volunteering, and we, you know, they're taking it. And we got a convoy going from Arizona and from California. And we're all going to Louisiana and the Gulf Coast. And we had like a sister city. It was, how was it, Jackson or something? It was Mississippi. And we were doing Mississippi, too, because there was a lot of help that was needed. And we were doing what we could to help. The problem was, is that Kirsten, her thing was she wanted to drive the U-Haul down to the Veterans Memorial Coliseum for a lot of the people that needed help down there. People couldn't get in. This is when you had 500 bass boats were right in line to go. They knew they needed the red. People on the news have spray painted on sheets, come save us. Okay. Yeah. And people were going, we know what they need. Let's go get them off the roof. So they show up, FEMA and M16s, and they said, none shall pass, you can't go. And they go disarm all the people of their firearms. Little old ladies beating up, taking, like, I'm good, I'll just stay. No. And then they're disarming people. All kinds of this stuff is going on. Kirsten was of a different mind. This was hers. She's going, no, you need legislators and people with access and shiny badges like me to be able to, you know, drive. See, that's what I'm doing. I can get in. She make a deal with them. I get to drive. I am the government. I'm here to help. I get to do it in. Nobody. I go, Kirsten, don't you understand that you're feeding into the very problem? People want to help. And you don't want them to because you want to be able to do it. Right. That's exactly what Bush and these guys, you know, hell of a job, Brownie. And these guys were, you know, they get on the rubble and say, and I'm in charge and I'm going to help. And people are starving. People are thirsty. People are sick. People are without shelter. People were wanting to help and they weren't allowed.
Right.
And Kirsten was supporting that. She's going, no, it needs to be done through the government.
Somebody's got to have a license. You got to be an official to help.
And that was her mindset. And this is what, so now here we're going, we got Sandy and everything. It's going to be all this government stuff. They're going to, and you haven't heard anything about, I mean, the only thing that you hear is how Governor Christie, you know, in New Jersey or something, you know, in New Jersey, we need and of course, what's he
money
want? He wants the government to pay for all of their costs and everything, you know. This is, and he's Mr. Conservative, okay? I mean, just let the where's the leader that says, yes, you are able to help your brother? Go. You don't even need to ask me permission. Why? You don't go. And well, the problem had been solved.
I remember the scene of the 500 boats lined up down the interstate in Florida.
5 miles.
It was incredible, but because these people could have emptied New Orleans in half an hour, and they were all familiar with the territory. But no, you cannot do that. Remember,
and had, the, and had exactly what they needed, little bass boats.
Yep.
That's exactly what they need. This is the fight that I was going back and forth with her on this. And so this is the kind of congresswoman that we have now.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, that, and this is 05, 06, around in there. You weren't able to really just post stuff up in your smartphone kind of thing. Well, that's what's happening now. Oh. You know, it's all this, and we get into this photography thing.
That information thing.
Now, the photography is not a crime. So let's go ahead and get to Carlos. Carlos, I got you there.
Hey, Ernest, how you doing?
I am more than wonderful, and you?
I'm doing very well.
Okay. Now, let's go ahead and talk about you. You had a adjudication finally on your stuff. You know, tell me what's going on with your case. You've been, because where we know Carlos from, you used to be a photographer for the Arizona Republic here, weren't you?
Well, I was a reporter for the Arizona Republic. I covered the police beat out there.
Oh, that'll give you a lesson right there.
But I was a reporter who took pictures.
And you go down to Miami-Dade County there, you know, and you start taking pictures. What happens to you?
Well, which time? I mean, I was arrested. I've been arrested 3 times down here for taking pictures or shooting video. I've been acquitted all 3 times, including the most recent one, which was just less than a month ago. And that's because, you know, they didn't have any evidence. And they tried the hardest to say I was an activist, not a journalist.
Yeah, so what?
And yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no difference in the laws as far as that goes. But that's all they had. You know, I guess it goes to show you they had nothing as far as me actually committing a crime.
Now, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about and get your point on this is that I don't know the details, and you can help Barry and I out on this. Miami-Dade cops, they're following somebody. He gets out of the car. They kill the guy. And somebody's taking pictures of it or something, yep. And then they just go into the guy's house and take his camera. Yeah. They go into his home and just take it. And then tell us the story and what happened and the justification and how they get away with this. What was going on?
Okay, well, this is what's going on right now. And there's a guy named Alexis Suarez. He was a security guard at the Miami International Airport. He had a permit to carry a concealed weapon. He was a licensed security guard. He had some kind of altercation with an employee at the airport where it apparently landed the other person in the hospital. So he's coming home, and these cops have investigated the other matter, and they have enough evidence where they can arrest this guy. Except they show up to his house in plain clothes in an unmarked vehicle in what looks like a pickup truck. It doesn't even look like an unmarked police car. And now this is the story I'm getting. They jump out of the car, and they walk up to him with guns drawn. It's kind of doubtful whether or not they actually told him they're police officers or not. Police say he pulled out a gun on them, and they had to shoot him dead. And meanwhile, his stepdaughter, because this happened right in front of his apartment building, his stepdaughter hears the gunshots. She calls 911, and she runs out with a cell phone, and she starts video recording. And she goes out there, and these cops are still pointing their guns at the car. They see her. She runs back inside the house. One of them chases her inside the house with no warrant, pulls the phone from out of her hand, takes it from her. And then later, when everything has calmed down, they give her a form to sign. And she's only been in this country 4 years. She doesn't know English. She doesn't know the laws in this country. I mean, she's used to Cuba where they do that. You know, they can go into your house and there is no constitution. So she has no idea what's going on, and she signs the paper because she's scared. Her stepdad was just killed outside. Her mom is freaking out. They're all freaking out. And then that's it. And so the whole story goes is, well, cops, of course, the local media is taking the police perspective and say, well, this man pointed a gun at police officers, so they had to kill him. But, you know, this is a guy who was, you know, he might have been arrested for, say, aggravated assault or battery. You know, this is a charge that may get him probation. And so why would he actually pull a gun on cops if he knew there were cops? I mean, he has nothing to lose. I mean, he has a lot to lose, is what I'm saying.
Well, did he know there were cops? I mean,
we don't know. Well, he's dead, and there's speculation that he did not know there were cops.
Okay, when we come back, we'll get a little more on this and get an update on Carlos Miller and his site. You know, photography is not a crime unless it makes cops look bad. You know, and then it is because they can. But we're going to talk about more with Carlos Miller, photographyisnotacrime.com, in just a little bit.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
It depends on how you look at the law. The law won. But which law? You mean law as individuals? Law as, Constitution? Law as, I got the gun? What does that mean? Let's get back to Carlos. He was in the break. He's calling the attorney to get an update. Did you get hold of him, Carlos?
Yes. I just got off the phone with him. That was the first time I ever did an interview while being interviewed. That was pretty cool. Yeah, I just got the phone with him. I've been trying to get a hold of him, and he's been really busy dealing with this. So he gave me the update. He said the phone has been returned, and they have not viewed. Asked him, did you guys view the video? He said no. They turned it over to a forensic expert because they want to preserve the evidence. They don't even want to mess with it. They don't want to be accused of meddling with the evidence. So right now it's being preserved or it's being reviewed by the experts.
Well, you got the Howard Simon, the executive director of the ACLU there, going, photography is not a crime. I mean, where do you get that phrase from?
Well, I'm going to have to trademark that phrase because it's being used a lot lately. But that photography is not a crime. And now, I don't know. I'm hoping people are getting to understand that, but it doesn't seem that's the case. But he also, now the lawyer also told me that they're... because they did view the cops did view the footage, and I asked, well, did they have a subpoena? Because under law, if they take someone's phone as evidence, they can't view that unless they have a subpoena. And the cops did not get a subpoena, but they argued, well, we reviewed it under consent. The young lady gave us consent. Of course, that consent was done under coercion.
The thing is that I'm looking at this case. Let me tell you what I know. I know that whatever video was on that phone didn't do the police officers any damage, which is why they gave it up.
Exactly.
Right, of course. And I know that, too. I mean, but what I know is there is no... the actual shooting is not on the video.
No, there's nothing that they were... but they were worried. I mean, they had a guilty conscience. I can guarantee you that.
But what it will show is that they were not dressed in police uniforms. They had no police T-shirts. They didn't appear to have any badges on them, anything to identify them as cops.
Or a police car.
Right, and it's like a grayish police, or not a police, it's a grayish pickup truck that basically pinned this guy in. This guy pulls into his parking space in front of his apartment, and the truck just pulls up right behind him, and they jump out with guns. So anybody is going to start thinking, well, I'm being robbed here. You don't expect cops to just jump out unless they look like cops. And then you're like, okay, well, maybe I was... speeding or made a wrong turn or whatever.
Let me tell you this one story and get your thoughts on this. We had this incident happen in the late 90s. There was a friend of ours, a good guy. His name was Eric Baudette. He was the son of a libertarian activist, woman, June Baudette. Yeah. And she's just a good-hearted woman. Lived up in Red Rock, which is a small town, almost a Flagstaff out in the middle of the nothing. Yavapai County, where Prescott is the county seat there. And they were very involved in arguing peacefully in the court system that they did not have to have a license to travel. This was a big thing with them. Mm-hmm. And they would go to all, everybody knew them. One time an officer pulls them over, blah, blah, blah. Bottom line is they get into a gunfight. Now, Eric was like, whoa, this guy, just drew down on me because he was out shooting with his dog. And he got out of the vehicle, and he had a sidearm, like a six-gun or something, a holstered gun. Well, the officer pulled his 1911 match pistol, blah, blah, blah. As he pulled it out, it had a hair trigger on it, and a round went off. And the guy's like, well, I guess I got to kill him now, you know, because it was by accident. And it just happened like a short time before that, a highway patrolman killed a young man up on I-40 mm-hmm. by accident. He pulled out his gun and it went off because it had, he said, a hair trigger and it was an accident. Well, what happened is the guy he shot happened to have been the son of a prominent individual and it became a big deal. So they made a rule, you know, firearms have to be, you can't have this match pistol, easy trigger, that's a policy thing. Well, this guy did, and it went off, and they got in a gunfight, whatever. He's serving, he's just about done, I think. Donna, check on Eric and see, you know, he should be getting out here pretty soon. 13 years he had to do. And that's a whole different story. I tell you all the crap that went on with that. I mean, we took our children down to the court. It was amazing how corrupt this whole thing is. Well, what happened was, is that I remember in the entire thing is that they always would put in what they would serve them. The county attorney got involved. It became a big, giant deal. All the Fiji stuff. But in the end, they got to introduce whatever they wanted, and he couldn't have any exculpatory evidence at all. You know, he went through a bunch of different attorneys. There was all kinds of pressure because it was the man. And I look at all of this evidence that happened when you have any kind of altercation with law enforcement, it always gets to the point to where the lesson learned out of this and on the blogs and, you know, the email list and so on before you had big internet, you know, in the late 90s, you still had a lot of emails. What came out was that all the reasonable people, they were saying when something like this happens, if you ever draw your sword on the king's man, you're going to be doing time. I mean, regardless of how you're justified, whether you thought what you thought or what, doesn't matter to them. So they want you to feel that you're supposed to just lay down and whoever's going to rape you, kill you, do you, whatever, you just, in case it might be a cop, you know, you're not supposed to retaliate. So yeah. What came out of it was if you get into an altercation with officers like this, something happens, you have to kill them. You know, and the police freaked out. Because just exactly what happened here in Miami, if you're going to draw your gun on someone, it's like you have dead men tell no tales.
Yeah.
I mean, of all the corruption that went in around this case, and there's a lot of it, we're going to get into, we'll do a show on it. But the lesson learned was, is if you're going to maintain your free, if you are defending yourself against this kind of aggression, you have to kill them or they're going to put you in jail forever for even trying to defend yourself. Or you're going to wind up dead. And I mean, is that the lesson that we want to, are you going to have a fair trial? Are you going to have seeking justice? Are you going to get, you know, the use of the Constitution? No. And this is another example of it. So I'm just, you know, do you get the impression that law enforcement and the government are really looking for the truth on this? Or are they teaching the people in Miami and the Florida and around the country that if you ever find yourself in this kind of situation, you have to kill somebody,
or take the hit.
It's pretty scary, you know. I mean, look, and the lawyer in the conversation I just had with him, he's saying that, you know, there's witnesses and they're getting evidence that perhaps he did not even draw a gun. You know, maybe he had a gun on him because, I mean, you know, he gets off work, you know, he's a security guard. Maybe he has a gun on him, and you know, and I don't know. It's just a very, very weird situation. And why would they come up to him with guns drawn if? You know, if they're going to arrest him for aggravated battery or whatever, you know,
death penalty. Death, because they can, you know, and they had a guilty, what do they call it, mens rea, you know, guilty mind, intent, so they run in and take the camera. I mean, if that isn't enough, right? And then all this stuff is adjudicated in the court of public opinion where Carlos Miller has a big, giant soapbox. We're going to talk about a soapbox when we come back. And also, I want to hear, you know, the final whatever on his case.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Get back to that peaceful, easy Christmas feeling. Oh, I know what we're going to do. Oh, start next week, we're going to be doing Christmas carols and Christmas songs. I get all Christmassy because Donna, you know, like it's a Christmas thing around here. Now, you know, this is Carlos Miller. Photography is not a crime. has really done a lot of work for all of us. And there's ways that we can support him and so on. And next week, he's going to come out with a line of clothes that is going to be help funding this stuff. And a lot of people, are going to want to support him and wear their goodies. I mean, I got my Cop Block stuff that I wear a lot and all kinds of different organizations. I need to have a whole bunch of Freedom's Phoenix more stuff, too. But tell us about that, Carlos. You know what? What's some of the stuff that you're working on? You got a civil suit that you're doing. You got more that you're going to file. You got to, this takes effort and time and money. And so tell me everything. This whole segment's you, man. Go.
Okay. Well, I'm involved in a civil suit against the Miami-Dade Metro Rail. This is an assault. I was assaulted by a security guard 2 years ago. I walked into the Metro Rail and basically assaulted. They took my camera. And that suit is still pending. We're still going through depots. I was deposed last month. And we want to settle, but, it takes a long time. I'm going to be filing a civil suit against the Miami-Dade Police Department for my January arrest, where they singled me out among other reporters, and they basically profiled me even before I was arrested. And, it's pretty obvious they were out to get me.
And well, you just had that case. And one of the pictures that we're scrolling up here on the webcam is a picture of the judge and the bailiff.
Yes.
You got like a semi-fair trial,
Yeah. The judge and the bailiff, they're both former Miami Dolphin players, and Ed Newman and Tony Nathan back in the 70s and the 80s. And, Miami's a big football town. So after I was acquitted, I got a picture of them, and they seemed very cool. And this is very cool. When you're able to walk into the courtroom and take a picture of the judge and the bailiff after you win a court battle where they arrested you for shooting video. I really like that. Next week, I'm going to launch my clothesline. I've been working on this for months and months, and is basically to support the site and to bring some money in, because I was being hosted by Barnes & Noble a few months ago, and I was getting income there, but they cut my contract. So I had to figure out a new way to make money, and I think it's going to be really good. We have some really, really good designs. And I'm going to come up with T-shirts and hoodies and anything, any merchandise, you can think of that will sell. And it's going to be very affordable. It's going to be very high quality as well. And it's going to be a separate website. I'm going to plan to launch it on Monday. And it's going to be I'm going to be marketing it towards street photographers mostly, people who go out there taking pictures of whatever on the street, And,
being in the industry, having been a reporter, you're going out taking pictures, you work for large newspapers, you go out and is the industry kind of shifting towards this citizen thing and they're just trying to hold on to their monopoly of information or something? What's going on?
Well, the industry is definitely shifting. And, for example, in the case we talked about earlier about the Miami-Dade Police Department, the Miami Herald, which is the biggest paper down here, they wrote the initial story of the incident. But then when it started, and then they buried the part about the confiscation of the camera in the 16th paragraph. And it was like a mere mention. Okay, yeah, by the way, they confiscated a camera. We had three reporters in that story. They had three reporters writing that. And these are veteran reporters. I respect their writing for the most part, but they kind of missed the ball here. And they haven't done a follow-up. And as neither none of the local TV stations, with the exception of CBS Miami, CBS Miami, after I wrote my initial story, then they followed up. They said, yeah, they interviewed Howard Simon, and they said, yeah, well, photography is not a crime. There's nothing from the Miami Herald, and I know they're busy. I know they're short-staffed. I know they got other stuff going on. But
this is right up their alley. Didn't you have one of the reporters or somebody testify on your behalf, didn't you?
Yes, Glenn Garvin. Right, but, he doesn't call the shots. He's a TV critic, so he's not the editor, so, he can't make the decisions. So, and I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I wish I did, but there's a lot of news that's not being reported, and this is happening all over the country. So the bloggers are filling that gap, and that's it. That's where we're at. Somebody has to fill that missing gap, and it comes down to the independent journalist.
Well, today we have Grover Norquist coming here to Arizona to a Liberty on Tour, or Liberty on the Rocks thing, or whatever it is, and I called 4409, our videographer here, and he goes, and I said, hey, man, he's like, literally a mile or two from you down the street where you live. You're going to get some Grover? And he goes, oh, I didn't know he's going. Oh, yeah, baby, I'm on it. We're going to have it. Because they, of course, scheduled Grover coming when they, before they knew Romney was going to lose. And all these Republicans are abandoning the no tax thing. And you got Boehner and all these guys are, you know, getting rid of anybody that didn't toe the line and going to compromise. And we're going to have another TARP kind of thing and fiscal cliff de la spending our money deal and, you know, nationalizing pensions or whatever the hell they're going to do. Who covers this stuff when they're out in the street? You get this kind of, you know, We Are Change stuff and Carlos Miller. And I'm wondering, are you being contacted by a bunch of people like that while they're out doing what you're doing? They have to go on the internet. They're looking for something. And all of a sudden, boom, they come across you and they go, hey, man, I need you to help me. And you go, look, man, I'm embroiled in all kinds of stuff already. I mean, how much are you being requested for help for other people that are in your position?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And one of the things I'm going to do starting in 2013 is introduce a feature on my website where readers can contribute their own videos, their own stories, or their own links, because I get overwhelmed. I mean, I'm getting links every day from, you know, through email, through Facebook, through Twitter, and I can't write it all. So I'm going to have a feature there, kind of like a Reddit feature, where people can put the links up there, and they can talk about it, they vote them up or down, and even if I don't get to writing them, because I can't write all of them, they still end up on the website. People can still see them, because there's just so much going on out there, and it just... And this is going to be really cool. I mean, we've been working on this for months. I have developers in Europe working on this, and they're really excited because they think this could be a model for the real, the mainstream media in the future. Because they have nobody. You know, they can't cover stories. So maybe have a way where citizens can contribute their own stories right there, even without it going through the eyes of an editor. Just put your own stories up there, and see what happens. And
yeah, there should be a place, something like freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, you know, that was kind of the concept behind a lot of this. We do have be a reporter, write a letter to the editor, be your own writer, columnist, so on. We have like 30-something contributors now. And on a regular basis, some high-end people. I mean, you know, and it's because you just provide the infrastructure for them. And I'm sure, especially in a site like yours, it kind of focuses on photography not being a crime. You know, what did you photograph? Well, it doesn't matter. You know, they said I couldn't. That's all. That's a story right there.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you're in public, you know, you can shoot it for the most part. You know, I mean, there's just very, very little exceptions. And it's great when you get it on video. Like, you know, I put a video up this morning of a guy down in Florida who's an Honor Your Oath. He's a big activist. And he was video recording these inmates on the side of the road working. You know how inmates do. And he was told by a corrections officer that it's a felony to videotape inmates on the side of the road, and they can land you in prison.
They always say everything's a felony.
It's a joke. I mean, and meanwhile, he's talking to the guy with the video camera. Meanwhile, the inmates are wandering off. I mean, that's a very comical video. I recommend people see that on my site.
Photography is not a crime.com. You know, tell me, have you been getting international attention?
Yeah, I mean, I get a lot of emails. I just got an email today from a guy in England asking me if there was anything in the UK, like my site, for the UK version, because there's so much going on out there. And I used to cover a lot of the UK stuff, but I kind of just focused more on the United States. And, another thing I want to do with the new site, with the site I have now, is add a forum where people can contribute from around the world, you know, Europe, Asia, Africa, wherever, and start that. It's a global thing.
You know, and the one way we can help Carlos Miller and his activist effort here is go check out photographyisnotacrime.com, and within a week, you'll have some goodies for them to support you by buying your apparel, right?
Yeah, that would be great.
Very cool. Let's do that. Make sure you get me some banner ads and some goodies, and, you know, give us a dollar on or something like that, and we'll promote the crap out of it.
Awesome.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Which now voices can be heard? Just want us to be louder and louder and louder. What the hell are we fighting for?
Yeah!
Just surrender and
you're going to declare your independence when we fight for. How about the truth and justice? You talk to Carlos and a lot of these guys, and you just you know, it's been in the past we have done kind of just, you know, exposure a lot of these people and so on. Make sure we're finding out who's really in it for the right reasons in the long term and who's going to be, you know, whatever. But I'm really trying to make sure that those that have the most staying power, those that are serious, those that are going to be the ones that we're going to be, you know, working with and on. And I'm, you know, really want to make sure that the staying power of certain people are emphasized. I tell you who's got staying power. You know, Barry Hass will be running for his fourth time for governor. You know, so I'm just, you know, what's your plan? In this last segment, I wanted to, you know, kind of give it to you and you give us update all the stuff that you're doing. You got your book that's in its final stages of being edited. Taryn Lupo and friends are helping you yep. with this. And there's just so much stuff you always got going on. What are you going to be doing?
Well, you know, I'm just going to keep on keeping on. It's funny because in a lot of times in the political spectrum, you see people who wander into a campaign or an election cycle, they lose, and then they just disappear. They just go away into the woodwork.
Well, they thought they were going to get elected because they're smarter and prettier than the other guy.
Well, that's all. It's all about ego. And I know I've been asked that by a lot of reporters. They actually try to say things like, you're a perennial candidate, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going,
as if
hey,
that was a bad thing or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, it's like, you don't get it. This was a lifetime commitment to freedom for libertarians. You can't unlearn the truth, and you can't just let it lay and let it roll over. So, yeah, I'm stay until I'm dead. I will keep trying to swing for the next generation. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, how's Gina on that? Your wife is kind of like, hey, man, I mean, come on.
Well, you know what? If everybody out there buys my book, then we'll be fine.
There you go.
See, that'll fix it. That'll keep us in the running. And I'm excited about the book. I'm getting more so because it's been about a year and a half. And what I started out with was just a basic premise. The idea that what if the president of the United States turned good? What if they really did just unloose the floodgates to pull a Ron Paul on the world? And that's what this book sets up is what would happen. And my objective was very clearly to weave.
So it's a fantasy?
It's
Lord of the Rings.
You're gonna like the twist. There is a big twist that allows this all to happen, where the president actually gives two speeches. One is the good speech, and one is the other speech, the typical speech. And what it's all about, what goes on inside the president's head. It traces his steps for a day of what he's thinking from the minute just before he gets up out of bed, what he's thinking, what's happening, the different events. And there are some really interesting twists.
Is this whole thing one day?
Yes.
You never told me that.
Well, it's all one day. It's you're traveling through the mind of the president and seeing what influences him. And his owners. And yes, there are.
You know what
owners.
That reminds me of is my freshman, sophomore year in high school, I think there was I had an English teacher, and she was or she was a government teacher or something. And she was enraptured by this one little book that was written by a guy that was on death row. And it was the day he was going to be executed. And it was a day in the life of.
Whoa.
And it was just, you know, one day and how you can do an entire novel on one day right. in the mind of someone. So, you know, I know it can be done. I mean, you know, it's been done before.
A powerful book. Back when I was really deep into the Soviet Union, there was a book called A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. And it blew you away just because it was one day in a Russian's life just before the collapse of the Soviet Union. And it really is an interesting idea because here we are again. A lot of people are now starting to draw the comparisons I was talking about 4 or 5 years ago when we were back on Air America. I was saying, man, this is the Soviet Union all over again. It's implosion of an administration, a bureaucracy.
It was amazing to me how many people embraced that, though.
Oh, they it was easy.
Like Kyrsten Sinema.
Well, it's very easy to believe that I don't have to worry about my food because the government's going to give it to me. I don't have to worry about my power because the government's going to give it to me.
It is a mindset.
Absolutely.
And that's the one thing that my article this month is about. You know, that's one, you know, and we're not alone. I mean, all of the big, successful kind of libertarian-oriented individuals, they're all coming and they're saying the same. As I started writing there, looking at it, I go, you know, it all came to focus this week. You know, as I'm just thinking, I'm like, wow. And then all of a sudden, just yesterday, the headlines on Freedom's Phoenix, I pulled up a bunch of, I went over the past, like, yeah, page two, it scrolls off the front page onto page two, page three on the chronology of the headlines that we do on Freedom's Phoenix. And I went through like the last four pages up there and just the last 3 days, and everything that I was trying to put, it's all there. Yep. I mean, I opened up so many, my browser crashed, you know, and I restarted. Man, I hope it brings them back. Yep. And the reason is because it is so obvious to so many people that are of real influence like you, that have been out in it, that are inspiring people when you give speeches and so on. They're like, yeah, what you said, but I just can't because it doesn't go along with the, you know, whatever. But you spend a lot of time on Facebooks and in these email lists and, and so on with Republicans. Are they ready to slit their wrist after this Romney loss or what?
Many of them. Well, they're excusing it. And you still have the blamers, but they know they can't blame the libertarians. You know, we gave us Obama and we're going like there was a difference between his twin sister, you know, Romney.
Yeah.
It was they're starting to get it now when they say you guys did it. And we're going, no, you did it because you didn't follow the right path.
Yeah. You're going to go to the discussion group with me next Wednesday. Yeah. All right, Gary and you, we'll all go. And That'll be interesting because these guys are going to try and put a face on it.
Right.
I mean, these are, I mean, you pick your state. I mean, you got these people in every state. They're the top of the, you know, flow down from the word given to them from on high of the billions of whatever. And they're going to try and, you know, and I can see it in their faces. They'll say it, but you know, they don't really believe it anymore. And before they probably, they were able to just say it and not, you know, feel as self-conscious about it. But now they're just like, it's so obvious.
They're just reading the words. They're not even acting anymore.
Right.
It's just they're just, okay, here's the script.
You know who's really good at the acting, though? Or you won't break character? It's Tom Jenny.
Oh, well, yeah.
Are you going to run for Congress someday? He's putting himself in. He's like a Jeff Flake, you know?
Yes, yeah, I've he seen. Is.
We've been around long enough that we know these guys. We see that, you know, we can just see it. And all of it is going to be for naught.
Oh, I get to talk to him backstage, and it really amazes me because I will look at some of our national figures, these political people, and they will be on a one-on-one conversation telling me things that literally would sink their careers. And I'm just amazed at why do they do this? And I think they do it because they know I have a reputation for keeping things fairly confidential when they're supposed to be. But if I find out from somebody else they've been doing bad, then they're fair game. So many of them come to me first. I mean, we've had several of our congressmen before this scandal broke coming to tell me just so I wouldn't be on their back.
Oh, you're such a freaking... You're making nice with McCain and Cindy McCain now, being all buddies and everything. That's how you get the pictures.
Hey, that's how... But see, the funny thing is, it's not that I'm being won over to their side. I'm the proselytizer.
Yeah, right. You know, McCain's going to go vote for freedom,
Talk to Cindy. But, you know, what's really scary about this book is there are several things that come to pass in the scenario that I set up and describe in the good speech. And one of them ties right into Carlos Miller. And that was news comparison sites, where the citizens will be putting up sites showing actual video, what really happened of an incident, and then showing the newspaper accounts and various newspapers all in one thing, and the reader gets to rate the writers.
I remember during one of your campaigns you did that on your site.
The media bias.
We
raised some money for that.
No,
too.
I remember the Republic, they didn't like that at all.
Yeah, when they wouldn't interview me. They did a whole big spread. They moved me to A18 or something and had the other two, that was Napolitano and Salmon, on the front page.
And they didn't mention you until the middle of the...
They didn't even talk to me for the article. And so that was when we started it, because we knew there was a fourth competitor. It's called the Arizona Republic. But what happened was you and I had refused to give them any interviews after that.
Yeah, in 06, I remember I was running for Secretary of State again. You were governor.
Yep.
That was your insurance policy. And, No, we don't want Ernie in
there. Yeah, you don't want anything to happen to that nice guy.
We need to elect Barry, because if Ernie wins, then he'd be second in the command. What happened was we would just refuse to do Arizona Republic interviews.
Right.
I said, no, we don't talk to you. Well, we're the, like, you're confusing us with somebody that cares. And you had a good line. What'd you say?
I said, you just went from the newspaper that wouldn't give the whole story to the newspaper that couldn't get the whole story.
Oh, they didn't like that either.
Oh, no. I had 14 reporters from the Arizona Republic after that bugging me for interviews.
Oh, yeah. No, they call me all the time. Yeah. And I was on the air, I'd call them the back of my Fry's Electronics ad.
Yeah.